think it was an email from Bruce.
Yeah.
That you passed on.
Right.
Has somebody just joined?
Suzanne Sen, the GAC liaison.
Welcome, Suzanne.
Good morning.
Why don't we give it a few more minutes to see who else joins the call. I assume Ross will be on the call and hopefully some others.
Greg Ruth responded positively, but Ken Stubbs, I think, probably will not be because he's traveling.
Okay, that's fine.
Vittorio, I think, was going to be going back from Geneva to Italy, so I'm not sure if he was going to be able to join the call or not.
I've had bouncing emails from Sarah Deutsch. I have her address at Verizon. Has anybody else got an address for her, a different one?
For Sarah?
Mm-hmm.
Hi, it's Greg Ruth joining.
Hi, Greg. Welcome. We have on the call Brian Darvill, Franny Wennings, and Suzanne Sen.
Glenn, to answer your question, the email address I have for Sarah is sarah.b.deutsch@verizon.com, and then I can't see the rest of it.
Thank you, Brian. That's the same one as I have.
All right. Okay. That's the only one I have, so.
Thank you.
Well, Glenn, why don't we go ahead and get started?
Fine, Brian.
If you want to maybe take a roll, see who's on the call.
Barbara's absent. She's excused herself. Brian Darville.
Yes.
Sarah Deutsch. Ken Stubbs. He's excused himself. Greg Ruth.
I'm here.
Franny Wellings.
I'm here.
Ross Rader. Kiyoshi Tsuru. Terry Clark. Victoria Bertolo. Suzanne Sen.
Yes, here.
Thank you. So we have one from the IP constituency, one from the ISP constituency, one from the non-commercial constituency, and the GEC liaison.
Okay.
The same Ross is not on the call.
No, he's not. I tell you what, why don't we go ahead and just talk about some of these things. And let me give you a little bit of background. A while back, Bruce Tonkin proposed that there be a conference call with him, myself, Ross Rader, and Steve Metallis of the IPC. And the purpose was to see whether or not we could advance the ball in terms of coming to some kind of agreement regarding who is data accuracy, because there was a split in positions. Registrars, as everyone knows, were basically taking the position that they were not willing to agree to any of the recommendations in the, you know, preliminary report, or whatever you want to call our report.
Brian, can I just ask you why Steve was on that call?
I think it was at Bruce Tonkin's suggestion. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not binding on the task force. It was just a conversation.
Yeah, it just seemed odd, but okay, go on.
Yeah, just to have a discussion, and it wasn't, you know, obviously we could disregard everything that was said on the call if the task force so chooses. Mm-hmm. But basically, we discussed a number of issues and talked about a number of things, and then Bruce sent around an email, which has now been sent to the task force, where he sort of, you know, purports to summarize the call. In my view, I'm not sure that it accurately summarizes what was agreed to. And frankly, in reality, let me rephrase that. I don't think there was an agreement in our discussion, nor do I think we had the ability to enter into any kind of agreement. But Bruce did put forward in his email some ideas that, at least, you know, as far as I understand it, him wearing his registrar hat and Ross Rader as the registrar rep would agree to. I actually have some problems with those from, you know, my perspective as the IPC rep. And so in any event, maybe we should talk about some of those just to see what people think and what they might have to add to that discussion. You know, does everyone have the email from Bruce that went out last night?
No. I don't think so.
No, I don't have it.
All right. Well, let me, while we're on the call, let me go ahead and just send this out a little bit. Let me see if I can find it and get it to you guys so that you can take a look at it, and we'll all be on the same page in terms of what Bruce is recommending. It's fairly narrow, and it's not, in my view, you know, just from the IPC perspective, not as the chair of the task force, but just as the IPC rep, I don't think it actually does enough. But, you know, I think we should talk about it and see where everybody is on it. And I'm going to just send this around right now, and I'll copy Bruce, and that way everybody will have it. But basically, he starts off by saying, he talks about how there's two relevant clauses in the registrar accreditation agreement, one of which deals with the willful provision of inaccurate or unreliable information, and then the other one of which requires the registrar to abide by specifications or policies requiring reasonable and commercially practical verification at the time of registration and periodic re-verification. Okay? Okay. Bruce's point number one, with respect to verification at the time of registration, he says that the registrar constituency would prefer to focus on only verifying data accuracy after a complaint. And so his proposal is that improved verification can first be implemented when WHOIS data is corrected following a complainant. You know, I think that really kind of begs the question of the whole purpose of the task force exercise. I mean, the whole idea was to improve data accuracy, and if we're only going to worry about data accuracy after a complaint is filed, that's not consistent really with the requirements of the registrar's accreditation agreement. So one of the things that we had talked about, and this is, I think, in the preliminary report, was that the registrars would, at the time of registration, verify two of the data contact elements, whether it's email, phone, fax, two of those. On the call, we talked about verifying one of them, and then Ross took the position that verifying email would result, you know, at the time that a domain name is registered, would result in a backlog in the pending queue. He wasn't sure technically how to deal with that. So now, in his email, Bruce comes out and says we shouldn't worry about verifying data accuracy at the time of registration. What do people think about that?
I'm in agreement. I mean, I think that there's constraints on their behalf, and I think that if it's done only after a complaint, then that's a good way to start this.
Yeah. From the IPC, as I've stated, I don't agree with that. But, Greg, what do you think?
Well, it's a different kind of thing you're getting into if you're trying to validate every registration versus just the ones you get complaints about. The ones you get complaints about, you can track down and spend a lot of time on because they're few in number. But if you try to do something with everyone that registers, then you're probably only going to do a perfunctory job anyway. So I'm not sure that our purposes will be served.
What about an email verification? You know, one data element. They register, they provide an email contact, you verify the email. Is that...
Yeah, there are some things you can do. I think you are able to do with very little effort.
And would that be one of them?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, I think at this point we don't have enough people on the call to really resolve this issue.
Can I just ask you something, though? If you... the intent would be to try and verify the accuracy of that information for later purposes, right?
But well, the intent is that they're required by contract to provide accurate information. Verification
right.
is to identify at the time of registration
right.
that the registrant data is, in fact, accurate. And we're not even being that ambitious. The idea that I think would make sense would be to verify at least email, because email has to be the most efficient and easiest thing to be verified.
Yeah, but it's also the easiest thing to change. I mean, the thing is that the people that you want to catch, right, that this contract was intended for, are going to be pretty skilled at changing contact data that they need to change. So if they have a certain email address at the time of verification, they can change it afterwards, you know. So it just seems like it would be a waste. If it is difficult for them, then it just seems like it's a wasted effort.
Well, but anything can be changed. I mean, I don't know that I buy that argument. Why would it be a wasted effort? Because it seems to me that some of the email contacts provided will be false at the time of verification, and then you can just not register that domain name. And you know, and obviously that'd be spelled out in the contract. So that would certainly eliminate certain inaccurately registered domain name.
But say I'm registering for a domain and I, by mistake, enter the wrong email address.
Right.
Then the registrar says to me, no, sorry, you can't register this domain.
Right.
And I say, but I made a mistake. At the same time, somebody else who was actually trying to, enter inaccurate data does the same thing. Who do they believe, and then how do they know whether to let them go on with another registration?
The idea would be it's not a question of you don't adjudicate the issue. It would be a real simple thing. Either you get the email address correct, or you don't. And if you
mm-hmm.
do, you get the registration. If you don't, you don't.
But then what if you make a mistake when you're signing up? I mean, it just seems a little harsh for a regular user.
It seems to me if you made a mistake, you would then have to re-register. You know, I mean, you have to be sufficiently with it to be accurate. And people type their own email address, you know. I mean, they should be able to get that done. I mean,
mm-hmm.
certainly... It seems to me certainly mistakes are going to happen because that's
mm-hmm.
just the nature of life. But, I guess I'm just putting out there that this would be one thing that could be done that would be fairly easy to do, and that it would, at the very least, it would confirm that at the time of the registration there is at least one element of communicating with the registrant that has been verified as accurate. And I think that's reasonable. But, you know, obviously we can air these views again next week when we get more people on the call.
Okay.
And obviously feel free to make your arguments. I mean, I understand that there are competing views on this. But that's one thing in Bruce's email that I just to put this out there for people to consider, it seems to me that if we're charged with trying to improve data accuracy, if we simply wait to respond to a complaint, we're not really advancing the ball at all, and we're basically, kind of undercuts the entire exercise that we've been engaged in for over a year. But that's, you know, obviously there'll be competing views on that, and we can talk about it. So that was his first point. Okay. And then the second one was talking about taking reasonable steps to investigate inaccuracy. Once inaccuracy is found, and then I guess that would be in response to a complaint. And I think what Bruce has here in response to a complaint, I think that's probably. Do you guys have that email now?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm on the second page of the email, and it's item number two. And he basically says you have to the registrar must verify at least one of email, phone, fax to notify the registrant of a complaint about accuracy. If one of the methods fails, he has to go on to a different method. And if all of them fail, then the name is placed on hold. That all seems workable to me, and I'd be interested in your views. But we could certainly. Recommendation in that regard, and put in some reasonable time limits, and that could be taken care of, and that's probably not a problem. What do you all think about what he has there in response to investigating inaccuracy upon a complaint? Who just joined?
This is Ross here. Sorry I'm late.
Oh, hey, Ross. I'm just going through Bruce's email.
Great.
And I just for your information, because I'm sure you want to hear this, I just spent, 5 minutes talking about Bruce's email, point number one, which basically says no verification of data accuracy at the time of registration. And I think that, I made two points. One is that kind of undercuts the entire exercise of the task force. And two, that, at least from the IPC perspective, it would be reasonable to verify at least email at that time. And maybe you could address that, because I know when we had a discussion with Bruce and Steve, you had taken the position that, there'd be a pending queue and you weren't sure how you were would be able to deal with that. But it seems to me that the email is, I guess I'm making two points. One is it is important to verify at the time of registration and to do so in a way that's, reasonable for the registrars.
Yeah, I think, that's an assumption, Brian, that I'm not sure that I buy. You know, I'm happy to talk about it, but it's certainly an assumption that that we shouldn't take at face value. It merits further examination. But B, the impact of buying that assumption is that it really sets the registration industry back to where we were in 1997, which is registration request comes in, it goes into a queue, that queue gets processed on a hopefully a first-in, first-out basis, and substantially decreases the turnaround time on registration requests. In other words, it moves from a real-time registration system that we've built up over the last 6 years, and, or 7 years now, and takes it back to batch processing mode, which is more fitting of the sort of the mainframe culture of the 90s. And that's just, I'm not sure from either a technical or an operational or an economic perspective that that's necessarily a step that the GNSM wants it back. And it's certainly not a step that the registrar constituency is willing to endorse.
Why can't an email be verified, say, in a matter of hours? I mean, if you build that in, there's a notice when they register that that the email has to be accurate, or it won't be registered. I mean, why can't that be done in essentially, real time?
It can be done. What I'm saying is that we need to first verify that that's a desirable thing to do.
Right.
I would argue that that's an assumption that we haven't decided on as a community. And
I agree.
And B, if we buy that assumption, then we need to have an explicit determination that we want to force registrants to wait hours or days for registration requests instead of processing in a real-time manner like we do today.
Yeah.
And I'm not convinced that's a decision that's been made at either level.
Right. Why is it that, if you could explain for me, why is it that verifying email at the time of registration is not desirable? Putting aside the logistics, why is that not desirable?
I would put the question to you, why is it desirable? I think right now we've got a moderately accurate database. Every indication is that the steps that we're taking around reactive enforcement to increase the accuracy of the database is actually being effective. So I'm not sure that we've actually got the degree of inaccuracy that some people are presuming we do. So I would put the question back to you.
Well, I mean, I think that you have on an ongoing basis, you have a certain percentage of registrations that are not accurate at the time of the registration.
Mm-hmm.
A very simple email verification could identify those and preclude them from being registered. I mean,
so what percentage are we dealing with?
Well, I mean, I don't know the precise number, but
2% or 80% or somewhere in between, or is it a majority? Is it a minority?
Well, clearly it's a minority. I mean, I'm not saying it's a majority, and I'm sure it's a minority of.
Would it be a small minority, a large minority?
I'd say it's a small minority.
So, for a small minority of registration requests, we'd inconvenience the vast majority of registrants looking to register a domain name in good faith.
Inconvenience in what way? I mean, a matter of.
You have to wait hours or days for the registration request to be processed.
Okay. I mean.
The economic impact to the registrar sector alone would be in the millions of dollars.
And what's your basis for that?
We process thousands upon thousands of registrations a day. For me to delay that revenue till tomorrow has a distinct cost right?
Well, can't you pass it on to the registrants?
No.
No.
It's either lost revenue, i.e., I didn't get what I wanted when I wanted it, so I'm not going through with this. It injects a new decision point into the process in other words, I can buy a DVD in real time, but I can't buy a domain. That doesn't make sense. You lose customers every time you give them an opportunity like that, A. B, there's that cost of actually implementing this batch processing infrastructure. Don't know what that is. And then there's just the sort of reduced service levels you're giving across the industry. You decrease the values of these registrations. They are less desirable products in the marketplace.
Not if it's an across-the-board requirement. I mean, people are still going to need to register their domain names.
.de does not process registrations in batch mode. .pro does not process registrations in batch mode. You decrease the value of these of .com.net or InfoBiz names. You can't, because you can't apply that across the board.
Well, I mean, I don't know that I buy the argument that people are going to switch to a different ELD as a result of a 4-hour delay in an email verification.
No, but why should they have to either pay for them to do that or wait for a domain when nothing's proven that it's necessary in the first place? And again, as I said before, I think that the people that you want to catch who are doing things that you deem as wrong or illegitimate uses are going to be able to evade the system. People who are just making a mistake in their registration are going to be the ones that are stuck. And then not only will it take days, if Ross says it has to process in the first time, they'll have to do it again. I mean, a 10-day process to get a domain name?
Not a 10-day. I mean, it seems to me to be a matter of hours.
Well, Ross just said that it would take a lot longer.
It wouldn't. I mean, you get these emails in response to a registration in real time, as he says. So there's no reason why you can't verify that quickly.
It drastically changes the registration process to the degree that, for instance, Brian, Registrar A can process their email verification request in. Let's say they're very efficient registrar. They're able to process it in 60 minutes. Let's say that's their mean time to processing these verification requests. Registrar B, less efficient. They're only able to do it in 90 minutes, or let's say 120 minutes. So the full 2 hours it takes them to process it. Registrar B gets a request at noon. That means it's going to take them until 2 o'clock to process that request. Registrar A gets a request for that same domain name at 12:30. Which registrant gets the domain name, for instance?
Yeah, it would have to be, I guess, the first one. In any event, let's move on to point two, because I don't think we're going to resolve point one at this time.
Well, I would strongly request that we either kill this whole line of discussion or justify its existence on the agenda. I don't think we can continue to discuss, defer on making these kinds of decisions.
Well, we don't have enough people on the call to make the decision today, Ross.
We've
got you, Delph, and Greg.
Oh, okay. So maybe we should put this issue to a vote of the task force. Is this, again, I think there's two issues there. Is this a valid assumption that this is a desirable policy, i.e. the verification at the time of registration? And then B, is this a change that the community is willing to live with?
Yeah, well, I think
is the policy and its implications acceptable?
Yeah, I think we should bring it to closure as well. But let's move on to number two and talk about that for a little bit.
So we're looking at Bruce's email?
I'm looking at Bruce's email. There he talks about the steps to investigate inaccuracy, and based on his email, that would be in response to a complaint. And he goes on with a various scheme. You check one. If it doesn't work, you go to another method of verifying the communication method. And if all of them fail, then you place it on hold. And then to correct an inaccuracy, the registrars would have to verify at least one of the following three data elements. What about verifying more data elements upon correcting an inaccuracy? I mean, at that point, you've got somebody who's inaccurate. What do people think about that?
Just before we go on, I wanted to make it real clear what the status of this email is. In August, it really became clear that there was a bit of an impasse in this task force, and Bruce took it upon himself to see if he could forge some more common understanding between the registrar constituency and the IPC. He did so in his capacity as a member of council, not as the chair of the council. He did it in his capacity as an interested registrar, and so on. So, please don't look at this as a something inscribed on stone that the task force must deal with because it came from the chair of the council. It's very much a personal statement that Bruce put forward as a registrar, not as a chair.
I went through that before you got on the call.
You? Okay, good. Thank you.
In any event, then he talks about correcting an inaccuracy, three data element, one of three data elements. What about verifying more data elements at that point?
Well, I think what we can't, I don't know if we can view this one in isolation from number three. Brian, and I think that if if there's a requirement to verify more data, that we should try and sort of funnel those types of requests through that third proposal.
Ross, I can tell you that it's a non-starter for a complainant to have to pay a registrar for an extra inaccuracy investigation service.
Why is that?
Well, because the registrars, I mean, it's sort of antithetical to any kind of enforcement scheme in law, and that's essentially what this is. Even though ICANN's not a legal body, it's still you're placing the burdens on the wrong party. I mean, here you have a registrant who's contractually and legally obligated to provide accurate information. Then you have a registrar who has contractual responsibilities for ensuring that there is, you know, verified accurate information. And then you have a victim, who's somebody who feels they've been victimized, domain name that where there's inaccurate information. And you're saying the victim should pay to verify the accuracy of data that the registrant was required to provide in the first instance, and that the registrar is required to ensure is accurate.
That's not what we're saying with this proposal, Brian. What we're saying with this proposal is that if the victim wishes to expedite or increased level of service that they're requesting from the system, that they should be willing to pay for that extra service.
Yeah.
And the as far as the contractual obligations go, I believe proposal number two is completely square with those. Number three is an additional obligation the registrar is willing to assume in order to ensure that members of your constituency have access to the service levels that they're obviously looking for. So I wouldn't say that we're forcing victims to pay for some enforcement, because that's exactly not what we're proposing.
Shouldn't the, I mean, don't you think the burden is properly placed on the domain name registrant and the registrar? And what's the rationale for putting it on the, on you know, who's been victimized by a false domain name registrant? I mean, in my mind, it's ludicrous.
What is ludicrous? I'm not sure I understand.
You're placing the burden of ensuring accuracy on the wrong party, and you're forcing them to pay for it. When the two parties who are in the best position to ensure accurate data, namely the registrant first,
yeah,
registrar second,
yeah,
don't have to do anything.
So that
doesn't make economic legal sense.
Well, either it doesn't make economic sense or it doesn't make legal sense. I'm not sure how it cannot make both sense. I'm not sure that I buy this argument, Brian. You're saying that 100% accuracy is mandatory under our obligations, and unless we achieve 100% mandatory, we're not upholding those obligations, and that is resulting in making a mockery of the system for people that are being victimized by errant registrants.
Ross, I'm not.
Hey, there's a whole range of reasons why inaccuracies are introduced into the data. Something as simple as changing my email address,
right,
without updating my domain record, introduces inaccuracies.
Right.
Proposal number two clearly deals with the vast majority of those.
Yeah, Ross, you're mischaracterizing what I'm saying. And let's face it, we're not talking about 100% accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about minimal accuracy,
such as providing for,
such as email,
ensuring that the contact data that we're required to stick into the WHOIS system is accurate, and that's exactly what we're proposing here, Brian.
I think that the registrant, it should be part of the contract that the registrant should have to pay for that. Because they're the ones who are obligated to do it in the first instance, and if they screw up, let's take the honest, innocent mistake.
Yeah.
Change your email. They don't update their information. Well, that shouldn't be something that somebody else should have to pay for. They should bear that, and that can be spelled out up front in the contract. Right? I mean, can't that be? I mean, certainly we could write a contract that says.
So by that same token, the defendant should pay the plaintiff's legal costs.
We're not talking about legal costs. We're talking about whatever cost it is you contemplate.
You're saying that I'm inappropriately putting the burden on the registrants or on the victims, as you call them.
No, the victims are the people who are complaining. The registrants should bear the cost, is what I'm saying.
The plaintiff should have their legal costs covered by the defendants, is what you're saying. The accusor, the person, the victim.
we're not talking legal costs. We're talking costs of verifying the accuracy of data.
Yes, sure.
Registrants are contractually obligated
to
provide and to update. That the burden on that should be on them, because they're the ones squarely in the position.
So let's lay it out here, Brian. If I'm not willing to perform services and I'm not being paid for, and I'm not willing to charge my customers more so that your constituency can make sure that the name server address is 100% perfect 100% of the time, that is inappropriate.
It's not 100%. We're not talking about 100%. We're talking about that small minority where inaccurate data has been identified and it needs to be verified.
Yeah.
At that point, it seems to me it would be very easy to deal with that with a clause in the contract that applies to all registrars. Not just you, but all of them. It says the domain name registrant contractually agrees that if it's inaccurate, they have to verify it. You're going to charge whatever, an amount set by ICANN or set by the registrar, whatever the market will bear. But they should pay it, not the complainant. I mean, that just seems perfectly sensible to me. What do other people think about that, Greg?
Go ahead, Franny.
That's fine.
Well, I think in if you want to take the analog of the legal system, yeah, it's very common for the defending party to pay the complainant if the complainant's case is just.
But that's
so
the thing.
That's right.
It has to be determined that the case is just. There's no review here that the person who's complaining that they've been victimized, there's no review there. Anybody could be complaining, and then the registrant would have to pay or Ross would have to pay.
Now, let me clarify. This is not something that is appropriately to be adjudicated, because there's not enough money at stake. It's a very simple system.
No, I know. I'm talking about that small amount of money, but
that contract says that the registrant has to provide accurate data, and that the registrant has to keep the data accurate. And if there's a complaint, and the data is not accurate, and that steps need to be taken to ensure the data is accurate to get phone, fax, email, and postal address, then the cost of that is borne by the registrant. And the registrant has to pay that amount to the registrar. It's that simple. It has to be essentially a self-executing, event. And you're not going to get third-party magistrates adjudicating this issue. It's just not worth it. But it should be in the contract right up front. Hey, registrant, you got to provide accurate data.
Can I ask you a really stupid question? What are we trying to optimize for here? So my understanding of the victim's requirements is that they need to be able to serve people. They need to be able to get in touch with people to threaten them. Letters need to go out. Lawyers need to be notified, and on and on and on and on and on. If one of those or some of those contact addresses or those contact points identified in proposal number two are, at least one of them are verified, what harm is there in knowing in having inaccurate middle name information or a non-up-to-date name server information in this record? I don't. What are we really trying to optimize for here?
I don't know that I understand your question, but the point is that the data should be accurate.
Sure.
You have a complaint, Ross. You have a complaint, and the data is inaccurate.
Every day, but
data should be accurate, and if there's a cost involved in making it accurate, then
the
that should be borne by the registrar.
Accurate. Brian, we can't deal with truisms here. I need to understand what the need is, and accuracy is not a need.
And the need is to contact the registrant.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the need, obviously.
That's the question I'm asking. So if you're able to contact the registrant, what further purpose does increase accuracy of that record serve? And if there's a valid reason, I've got all the time in the world for it. I'm sure we can figure out somebody to deal with it. I'm just not sure that I understand what the need is.
But, Ross, all of the information there is for purposes of contacting the registrant.
Yes, Brian. So if a complaint comes in, proposal number two is triggered. Let's assume we adopt proposal number two. I've heard nobody saying proposal number two unto itself is bad, but maybe it should go further, maybe it should just stay as it is. But nobody's saying it should get smaller. So I think we all agree there, at least the people on this call.
Well, I mean, you know, I think it needs to be clarified, but
sure.
And I think we can work with that.
Generally speaking, right. So we're talking about degrees of implementation here. So we're really debating proposal number three. Is it fair that somebody, who should pay for it, should it be done as part of number two or not, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What I'm asking is, if number two is in place and you get an inaccurate record correct and you're able to contact that registrant, does that go far enough?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that? I got distracted.
If proposal number two is implemented and you're able to file a complaint and have an inaccuracy completed or corrected, I'm sorry, which allows you to then file service on a registrant or get in touch with their lawyers or on and on, and you do what you need to do to contact that registrant, is that sufficient for our purposes? And if so...
If it has the email, phone, fax, and post, I imagine that would be adequate.
Okay. So then beyond that, what I need to understand is what do we get, what is the requirement that drives the need for further accuracy beyond that we need to get in touch with the registrant requirement?
Well, under, I'm not sure, under item number three, item two only gives you one element, so you might have an email.
Yes.
So item two doesn't go far enough because it doesn't really give you all of the basic contact data. And you should have all of the basic contact data in response to a complaint.
But help me understand it. So when you say all the contact data, you're talking about all of the email,
phone, fax, email,
and fax address, the mailing address,
right,
and a telephone number.
Email, phone, fax, and the postal address.
There's really four elements you're talking about. So it's not all contact data. In other words, does the name have to be accurate? Probably not. Does the phone number have to be accurate, the mailing address?
The name would have to be, yeah, I mean, I think the name should be included there, too. Yeah.
That's more nice to have and not need to have, because if you've got a valid mailing address, you can still serve that person, you can still, et cetera, correct?
Yeah, but, I mean, it seems to me you should have...
In other words, if my mailing address on my record is correct, but my middle name is wrong, or I've got an alias there, are you concerned?
Well, I think you should have the name, yeah. I think you need the name... If you're going to be serving legal process, you want to have the correct name on it.
Is it mandatory or desirable?
Well, if you want jurisdiction, usually you got to have it.
Okay.
So
you're helping me understand. These are honest questions that I'm asking. I really don't know. I'm not a lawyer.
And I mean, you need the name, and the postal address, and probably phone or email or both.
If the registrant contact information is correct and the administrative contact information is incorrect, is that sufficient for your purposes?
I'd have to think about that, but I think if the registrant contact information is correct, that would be more important. But I'd want to think about that.
So I would ask you the same question about the billing and technical context, obviously.
Well, I don't know that this goes to that, right? I mean...
If it doesn't, I think it should. I think that was the intent of the proposal. In other words, if there's a complaint about inaccurate elements within the record, there's processes in place that can rationally deal with that are in use in the industry today, and it would be, I believe, wise if more registrars adopted those practices as opposed to less. I think there's a balance there between the sometimes competing interests of the IPC and the registrar community that can be met through this proposal, and I would really urge the constituent or the task force, I'm sorry, to take a strong look at point number two as being a great starting point for future compromise. And even if that means that we have to take one small step forward, I think we stand to gain so much over that longer term. know, we can argue about number three and whether that should be included in number two or separate or...
Well, I just don't think that the... I think it's a non-starter that the complainant should have to pay any fee to ensure that a registrant provides accurate data. I just think that that is completely lopsided and backwards because it puts the burden...
If number two was implemented and available today, and if it was the standard, you know, hypothetically speaking, if it was the standard, would it be inappropriate to implement the additional checking described under number three as expedited service and charge anybody that wished to have expedited service a fee without making any distinction as to whether they're a registrant, complainant, victim, lawyer, or otherwise?
You could offer that as a business policy, but I don't think that that should be something that is, you know, an ICANN policy. I mean, if you want to offer the service, I mean, that may be something, you know, I don't see why you can't do that. But I don't think that it should be part of the contract or part of, you know, anything this task force does. Because, I mean, we'd be completely opposed to having the, you know, anybody other than the registrant paying for that. In an effort to get the accurate information.
Well, I can tell you that if it's going to go into the policy, registrars are going to charge for it as they see fit. I think the redemption grace period is a great example of that. The redemption grace period is a right that the registrants have today, and I think it's a great policy. It's not something that comes without a price. If the registrant wishes to exercise that right, certain registrars will charge you varying fees for that. And I don't think that's an inappropriate construct within the free market environment they're operating in. So I would really urge you to, describe the, you know, I'm not sure, not wanting to pay and being inappropriate to pay, there's light years of difference between those two positions. You're saying that it's inappropriate and ludicrous to charge anybody but the registrant. I'm saying in a free market, you're going to have different models and you're going to have different levels of fees depending on which registrar you go to. And that's one of the pleasures and penalties that we get with having such a system. But to specifically state that a registrar may not choose anybody, or may not charge anybody but the registrant for this service is equally a non-starter.
And that's not even talking about legitimate use of this data anyway.
Sure.
All right, you guys, I have to get off the phone, but will some minutes be sent out, Glenn?
Yes, Franny.
Yes, okay.
And
so I'll do the rest of the call. Okay.
Right,
and
we'll be continuing this next week. Maybe we can try to bring it to a conclusion.
Sure.
Wait, are you concluding now, or am I?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Probably shortly, though.
Okay, I'll send you guys next week then.
Maybe we should, I don't know, Glenn, if you can do what you can to get other people on the call next week and see if we can bring some of these issues to a conclusion. And I'll look at item number two, and item number one and two. I mean, I'd like to find out what the task force position is about verifying email at the time of registration. And maybe it's just going to be the same as it was before, which is, you know, the registrars won't agree to that. But at least keep that on the table for now, and we'll see. And then we can look at item number two. Item three, you know, I'm a little bit troubled by that, but we could talk further about that. So we'll send around an agenda next week, but I think it'll essentially be continued discussion of the rest of these points, and let's see if we can bring it through to some kind of conclusion. Quickly, because I do think that Bruce wants this thing wrapped up fairly soon, and I don't know that we can continue to beat our heads against the wall on it too much longer. So I'll send around an agenda either later this week or early next week, and then we can continue this. But let's pick up next week where we left off, talking about, you know, figure out whether or not we're going to have any kind of verification at the time of the registration. Number two, essentially as stated here by Bruce, maybe clarify it a little bit so we understand how long this process is going to take. And then three, we can further talk about whether or not there's any kind of aid service. It seems to me if there is going to be a paid service, it should be, you know, a registrar may charge, you know, for it, but not necessarily. You know, maybe in practical terms, it is going to be the complainant who's going to be looking for that information. But I think that that's something that.
So your real objection, I'm just reading the message here, but your real objection is saying the complainant may pay a registrar as opposed to the actual proposal itself.
No, my objection is that to the extent my objection is that there should be, you know, what at the very least, I mean, you're saying, okay, we shouldn't have to verify, even though we've got this entire task force working to improve debt accuracy, we should not verify at the time of registration. Problem with that, obviously.
Sure.
And then you say, when there's a complaint, you should do minimal verification, as listed in item two. And that, you know, it seems to me, when there's a complaint, at that point, the burden should be to do, you know, to basically get all the contact data so we have that. And, you know, whether or not that can be limited to the registrant and the technical or the registrant and the administrative, whatever, you know, we could talk about that. But it seems to me at that point, once there's a complaint, there should be more than this very cursory verification that's proposed in item two.
Yeah, no, and, you know, notwithstanding the issues of gaming and all those other things,
that's really what I'm saying. And
yeah.
So I guess what I'm saying is once there's a complaint, you should have the verification, and this item three then becomes irrelevant except to the extent that the registrar wants to charge it back to the complainant. I mean, to the registrant,
right.
To the registrant. I mean, I think that would make sense.
So you know, I guess what we're saying with number three, Brian, is that if somebody is convinced that they've got somebody on the hook and they need 100% solid, accurate information and they need it right now, you know, i.e. they're bringing suit, and this is serious enough to request that the registrar drop everything and do it immediately, we're going to want to see some fee for that service.
What kind of fee are you talking about?
Don't know. If I'm going to, you know, put this at the front of the line and do 100% investigation on it, i.e. I can now certify that it's 100% accurate information, or even 99% accurate information to the best of my knowledge, I'm going to want to see $100 or so for it. You know, maybe $50. I don't know. You know, it's going to be more than $6, I can tell you that, right? If, on the other hand, that this isn't a massively time-sensitive issue and you can deal with less than perfect information and don't need that sort of guaranteed to go along with it, we can stick that in a queue, we can do it over the course of a few days or a few weeks, depending on however long it takes, depending on how many requests we have outstanding at any given time, and that's really what we're describing in number two. I wouldn't go so far to say is that we're only looking to do a minimal amount of verification, blah, 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 blah. It's you know, that's not where our head is at. We want to make sure that we have as many happy users as possible within the system, and that includes the IPC. So, you know, let's not forget that trademark owners buy domain names too. You know, it's certainly not an us versus them thing that we're looking at here.
Okay, that's fine. Let's continue this next week.
Okay.
But I think Glenn, the agenda. If I don't get something to you, just send out what we sent out before, because I think we should pick up where we left off and then see if we can bring this to some kind of closure.
Okay, Brian. Then that means the 3 points. Verification of email data at the time of registration. Clarify how long it will take under point two, reasonable steps to investigate inaccuracy. And number three, what would you put that one as?
Extra steps. You could call whatever extra steps to investigate inaccuracy.
Extra steps to investigate inaccuracy, fine.
We'll pick this up where we left off today, and then I think we should try to move fairly quickly after next week to wrap things up. And whatever you can do to get Sarah and Ken and the others on would be helpful.
Ken will normally be on next week because he was traveling this week.
Okay.
And if anybody has got personal contact with Sarah, I would appreciate it. I would appreciate you passing the task force times on to her, but I'll try and get hold of her.
Yeah, she travels a bit, so she may be He may be on the road, but yeah, that's fine. Okay, that sounds good. We'll do the same time next week.
Great.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Russ.
Thanks
Greg.
Bye now.
Okay, bye.
Bye.